there, students. Welcome back to Intensive Review. We're going to take a quick look at 3.5, some of the post-Reconstruction stuff that's going on with African Americans, specifically at some of the leaders that arose at the turn of the 20th century, what we typically refer to as the nadir, the low point of American race relations. So keep in mind that Jim Crow, we're talking about racial segregation, right? And then you've got, lynchings are a big problem. Now, these are executions of African Americans by angry mobs without a trial. Keep in mind, white people got lynched once in a while, too. But at the same time, this was especially a problem with, race-related, instances where somebody who was black would be accused of something and they would be just railroaded and hanged without a trial. Now, progressive reformers, they did a lot to try to help immigrants, all right? But really, when it comes down to it, progressive reformers did very little to help African Americans, all right? And that's important to note. For example, like Woodrow Wilson segregated the federal service, all right, when he was president. So really, race relations take a step back at the turn of the 20th century. And so black leaders such as W.E.B. Du Bois, Booker T. Washington, they disagreed about the best way to help black citizens achieve political, economic, and social equality. Now, Booker T. Washington was born as a slave in Virginia, wrote a book called Up From Slavery. And he went on to get an education during Reconstruction. And he founded the Tuskegee Institute. And the Tuskegee Institute was a place, it's still in Alabama today, but it emphasized not only academic education, but also technical education, also like a career center sort of thing, that you are going to learn a job, a trade, you are going to learn how to do something useful in the community. Now, Booker T. Washington felt like through advancing themselves economically, that African Americans would eventually achieve greater equality because they're able to be useful to the community. Keep in mind, if somebody provides a useful service to the community, the logic is that maybe that person would be less likely to be lynched if they were accused of a crime. Maybe you'd be more likely to give somebody a fair trial if they are the stonemason or the builder or somebody like that in the town. And Booker T. Washington felt like economics is really first. If you think about the cart and the horse, that in his Atlanta Compromise speech, Booker T. Washington said, look, I'm not really about agitating for the vote. That what we want from the white community is help with helping ourselves. All right, that we want help with our vocational education that we're doing and help economically. And in return, we are not going to agitate for the ballot. And Booker T. Washington was very popular among white leaders and progressive white leaders because he wasn't agitating and he was trying to do something that was very pragmatic. Now, W.E.B. Du Bois had some respectful disagreements with Booker T. Washington over some of these things, and one of them is that while Booker T. Washington, he said that it's no use pursuing the vote if you don't have money. That for Booker T. Washington, money comes before power. For W.E.B. Du Bois, power comes before money, and you need to focus on that. And so W.E.B. Du Bois, who was one of the founders of the NAACP, so you should know that W.E.B. Du Bois is one of the founders of the NAACP, and he was concerned about voting. That was what was chiefly concerned to him. Now, he was a graduate of Harvard. He was from the North. And keep in mind that a Harvard degree at that time, if you were white, you were at the pinnacle of society. I mean, the Harvard degree still means a lot. But for W.E.B. Du Bois, he was still disadvantaged. He was still discriminated against, even though he had that Harvard degree. And then there was Ida B. Wells Barnett, who was a muckraker, all right? You might see her as Ida B. Wells on some test or Ida B. Wells Barnett, but she was a muckraker, she was a journalist. She wrote expositions about lynching in the South and brought attention to what was going on, all right? So while other people like Ida Tarbell and Upton Sinclair were writing about Standard Oil and the meatpacking industry and that sort of thing, Ida B. Wells Barnett was writing about lynching. Now, also, there's Marcus Garvey, who was the leader of what some people call the Back to Africa movement. But really, more importantly, now, yes, Marcus Garvey did have a plan and a vision for bringing every black person that was in the Americas, the Caribbean, North America, South America, returning to Africa and creating a black nation. Now, keep in mind that this is in the wake of World War I. If you think about self-determination of peoples, you know, the Poles have their nation. The Czechs and the Slovaks have to share a nation, but they have one, right? And all of these countries have their own nations, but what about a black nation? And that is Marcus Garvey's vision. Now, he is also the father of black nationalism, all right? This idea of, you know, blacks seeing themselves as a people and also having pride in their race. Keep in mind, this is an era of white supremacy, where it's not just the white people who thought that they were better than black people, but black people were taught to believe that they were racially inferior to whites. And Marcus Garvey saying, look, no, you're not. And that is where Marcus Garvey says, look, that in our movement, we're going to start envisioning Jesus as a black man. You know, Jesus, who was always portrayed as white European in spite of having been a Middle Easterner. So that is Marcus Garvey's contribution. And, you know, any of these people could conceivably come up on an end of course test. And with that, that wraps up Standard 3. And in a bit, we are going to begin Standard 4, looking at the movement west and the Transcontinental Railroads and all of that. See you in a bit.